Welcome back to Innovation Hub. I'm Kara Miller. Changing how and what you think about other people is hard. You see someone walking down the sidewalk towards you, and you unconsciously start judging all sorts of things about them. Their clothes, their bag, their age, their skin color. Claude Steele, the provost and executive vice chancellor at the University of California, Berkeley, says this happened to a friend of his when he was getting his grad degree in Chicago.
And dressed like a student, pretty big guy, walking down the streets of Hyde Park, he began to realize that just his mere presence was making whites in the neighborhood kind of uncomfortable. They would avoid eye contact. Sometimes they'd cross the street to get away from him. So he could see that he was being seen through the lens of the stereotype. In fact, he was a graduate student in psychology at the University of Chicago. For a variety of reasons, he began to practice whistling. And among the things he would whistle were Vivaldi tunes, which are extremely hard to whistle, and Beatles tunes. And he'd walk down the streets of Hyde Park whistling these tunes. And when he did that, he realized that people saw him completely differently, that they just didn't see him through the lens of that stereotype. They would walk by and say, "How you doing?" And it was a completely different experience.
Steele is the author of Whistling Vivaldi, How Stereotypes Affect Us and What We Can Do. He's been looking at how you unwind stereotypes, particularly in schools, where teachers can be introduced to new and powerful techniques. I asked him how those prejudices initially settle in.
Well, just as members of our culture, we all know stereotypes about many of the identities that we encounter on a daily basis. So we have a whole, almost any listener could take out an envelope and write down the stereotypes about many, many groups in our society. So just as members of the culture, we know these stereotypes. And when we're in circumstances where they're relevant, before we've had a chance to think about them, we can use them, see the world through their lens, and see a person as in a way, you know, the stereotype lends an interpretation to something we're seeing. And that can happen quite beneath our awareness. It happens so quickly. It's in essence a summary, a way by which we don't have to know all the details to come to a particular judgment. Stereotypes operate that way. They give us that kind of summary thing, but they can be, is famously known about them, profoundly wrong.
Have you seen interesting experiments that have been done to reveal these prejudices and that maybe tell you something new about how prejudices function in our brains?
Imagine a group of adults watching a videotape of two children playing with each other. They're two boys.
Okay.
The videotape stops at various intervals, and you have to rate what's going on between the two boys you're watching. And the rating options are that they're just fooling around, or they're aggressive, or they're being violent with each other. And you watch the videotape, and it stops every couple of minutes or so. You make a rating, and in the last act, last frame of the videotape, one boy shoves another boy, and the critical question is, how do you rate that behavior? When that boy who does the shoving is white, raters tend to rate that act as just fooling around. Ah, they're just fooling around.
Mm-hmm.
When that boy is African American, they tend to rate that behavior, that same behavior, as violent.
Interesting.
It's done quickly. People have no sense of a stereotype shaping them. And interestingly, of course, African-American judges, raters in this situation, are almost as likely to do that as are white raters in that situation. It's just the deep way in which stereotypes exist in our minds as little pieces of knowledge that, without a lot of thought, come to shape our perception of things.
If kids are discriminated against or stereotyped in that way, what does the research tell you about how that impacts their lives as they go along?
What I would say is that an awful lot of American kids arrive at school with an identity. They can have a sense that something about them might cause them to be seen negatively in school, even
okay.
at a very, very early age. I'll give you, I hope my daughter will forgive me for this, but I'll give you a personal example. I have a 5-year-old grandson. African-American grandson. And his mother, my daughter, is what you would call ethnically ambiguous in appearance. Her husband, my son-in-law, is African, Ugandan. So they have this beautiful little brown grandson of mine. I may be slightly biased in that, but I don't think so. So he's 5.5 years old. So just a couple of weeks ago, we're riding in the car as a family together, and he spouts out the most amazing sentence that we're still trying to understand, which is that he says, "Oh, mommy, you're lucky because you don't look black like daddy and I do. And that means people will like you."
Whoa.
Whoa. So, you know, this is my business. And here's this grandson of mine stating something that suggests that kids at a very early age have some sense of how they're seen. Now, we've been tracking this down. What caused this? Where did this come from? He's been seeing an awful lot of television coverage of Michael Brown and the shootings and the police treatment of African-American males. And I think just in his... He's just adding two and two together and coming to this sense of things. So I use that story, as I say, I hope my family will forgive me for that, but to illustrate that really quite early in life, children have a sense of how something about them, who they are, might cause them to be seen in school or in other settings as well. And it's that can sometimes, that pressure, that sense of not wanting to be seen in this very negative way, that can, in a variety of ways, interfere with their performance and their ability to engage school in an open-hearted way.
So if you are on the education side and thinking about, okay, then how do you chip away at stereotypes, at prejudices that, as you indicate, are already sort of starting to settle into little kids' brains really, really early, is there something creative you can do?
Well, I'll give you some illustrations of them. This is research that Jeff Cohen did as a graduate student at Stanford. He's now a very distinguished professor at Stanford. But some years ago, he did a great experiment asking the question, how does a white professor give critical feedback to an African-American student and have that feedback be trusted? After all, the student might worry that critical feedback is not coming from his or her work per se, but may be a reflection of the professor's stereotype about them. The answer is don't just give them the negative feedback, because that will leave the ambiguity I just described. It doesn't help to say something, you know, like a very positive bromide up front. You know, I know your family and I think the world of them, and here's the feedback. That that won't be trusted anymore. But what does work is if the feedback giver, in this case the professor, says something like, I've looked at your work. We really have high standards here. And though you need to improve some things, I really think you can meet those standards. That combination of using high standards, that signals that you're not seeing them stereotypically. So that's an example of how right there in the everyday experience of giving feedback to students, teachers can learn ways of being effective with students with a diversity of backgrounds. I think this is one of the biggest kind of often understated challenges in American education, is that we do have now a highly diverse student body, and we have to develop techniques, teaching techniques, that address that situation. And sometimes just following a strictly cognitive approach to schooling, thinking of the enterprise as primarily an enterprise of developing the cognitive life of the child, may miss the fact that a lot of what goes into a student succeeding in school is their comfort there and how strongly they can identify with being there and feel valued there. These are things that, if you can gain them, that lead the student to put aside their concerns and worries about how they're going to be seen and more directly, openly engage the work at hand.
Well, when you talk about the potential of schools, do you think that that marks a real change in what people have thought for the last few decades in terms of how crucial the family was in the equation of a child growing up and being successful?
I do think in this era of No Child Left Behind, which there's a lot to complain about in its implementation and the like. I do think underlying it all is an American faith that we should be proud of, that our schools can be a site where these issues can be addressed, and that they have a responsibility to do that, and that we should, as a citizenry, be prepared to help them do that by giving them, I think, the resources, the training that are needed for schools to step up and meet the challenges that I just described. I think in that movement, there is that underlying commitment, and I do think that maybe is a shift, a positive shift in our society's understanding of what schools can do for the society in general.
Claude Steele is the author of Whistling Vivaldi, How Stereotypes Affect Us and What We Can Do. He's also the executive vice chancellor and the provost at the University of California at Berkeley. Claude Steele, thanks for being here.
Well, thank you.